Hi. Not quite live and not quite the other side of the world. Close enough. It's me bringing you today's news yesterday. And I'm just contemplating what I'm doing. I'm taking a moment out of my very busy week to talk to you. And taking time to contribute to the world of people who like to review contributions, it's a good thing. I know one guy named Alec Hocking who was starting his own business, but then every Sunday night he'd take a little bit of time, or once a week. I don't know, specific day, might have changed the day or something, but whatever. Once a week he would do some creative writing. And I've got a number of friends. I say, yeah, I want to write. It's like, okay, all right. Good for you. And I don't really put much stock in it because, you know, the good writers are the ones who write a lot. George R. R. Martin. Tolkien. They arguably had more background written about their books than the actual books. So for, possibly, I'm totally guessing here, but possibly for every word in The Lord of the Rings, you've got two or three words of background. So here you got 100,000 words representing 300,000 words. The good writers write more. It's the only thing that separates the Amabees from the Wannabees. How much you actually do something. It's time. That's all that there is to it. It's not where you went to school. It's not how much untapped talent God gave you at your birth. It's not about how much of a talent you've wasted by neglecting it. That doesn't matter. What only matters is how much you write. Winston Churchill would put in about 1 hour of work pondering about every minute of a speech. So a 30-minute speech would take him a 30-hour work week to prepare. As prime minister, that's a 30-hour work week is about all you're going to have to prepare speeches for, because all your rest of your time is eaten up, you know, watching the bombing of London and that sort of stuff. So I've been contemplating, you know, writers, where are writers going to end up? You know, we're in a day when there's writing everywhere. Everybody's able to write. And I think you should write. Writing's a good thing, but what's the writer job? We don't have scribes like we used to long ago. We don't have reporters who are preparing news stories for the press, because there's only one press in town, right? You know, now anyone can get a printer installed in their house. You can buy one. High quality print shops are a different story, but anyone can have some level of a printer. You can blog, you can write, you can mail letters. We got writers are no longer a commodity, or are they? Do we need people that are more or less wordsmiths? Maybe editors are going to be the thing. I don't know, but whatever it is, get into writing in media. I think we should have more contributors in the world. And whatever it is that you do, do something, draw pictures, have an art, have some expression that you engage in regularly. And whatever it is, I don't mean a private art, something you contribute to others. Contribute. Do something. We need experts and CEOs having blogs, sharing their experience with the world. We need those tips. It's discipleship. It's learning. You know that thing about how you remember, 10% of what you hear and 20% of what you see. You know, and then it's like you remember 90% of what you teach others. Oh, there you go. So here I am taking time out of my work week, and I've been thinking about, I've been noticing something. You know, there are things that we miss out on in life, and there are things that other people miss out on in life. I was just talking with a friend. She posted something mildly controversial. She was trying to stick up for the defenseless. You know, you have these, I don't know. She saw a poster on Facebook making fun of poor people. And the truth is that the poster had some truth to it. That's a thing. you know, poor people make bad buying choices or something like that. It was the idea. And she put that on her Facebook page and said, I don't like this picture. It's insulting. It's a very hateful poster. And I don't like this kind of thing. And I hope that you don't put out posters like this one. It wasn't an endorsement. It was, you know, saying if you see this is wrong. If you've been insulted by this stuff, I'm with you. That's what it was. One of her friends of 40 years chose to get insulted and said, I'm deleting you on Facebook, and then deleted her on Facebook. And since the lady happens to be a poor lady and her phone is on and off, you don't even know if you're able to call her on the phone. So she deleted. The only way for her friend of 40 years to contact her after her friend said, I'm sticking up for people like you. And it made no sense to her. We were just talking about it. It's like, what? And the part of it came down to shame. And we discussed a little bit on Facebook just a few hours ago, actually. Myself and this friend, well, a friend of my mother's, actually, and, you know, family friends. And I came to the conclusion that it was shame. When someone has a spirit of shame, an attitude, an emotion, like there's this thing on them, and it's shame, it cripples them, it paralyzes them from even being able to discuss the topic, even to bring up the topic, to say, you know, it's okay. You know that problem of your house that burned down? I went out and bought you a new house and completely rebuilt that house for you, and I paid $200,000 to do it, and it's there waiting for you. Here's the key. Oh, it doesn't matter. You brought up the burned house. They've got this shame thing on them, and they can't talk about it. How dare you bring it up? Wait, the person's house burned down, and I rebuilt it for him, and I paid $200,000 for my friend to be able to get his new house. They won't care. They don't care what, when someone has shame on them, it doesn't matter how much you give them, how much you care. Just bringing up the topic, no matter how well and wonderful, closes their ears, and at the drop of the hat, they will end a lifelong friendship with you without further notice and permanently. It's amazing. It's shocking. And with this situation, with my friend, as with others, we sort of concluded that there wasn't anything more to do. You had to let this lady go. She had to let her friend go. Love knows when to let go. And it's just interesting how the things in our lives can, you know, we resist the things that we need to talk about most. The things that we need to talk about make us not want to talk about them. And I hope that you in your life, you're willing to be free and open. But however it is, I've just sort of noticed that we tend to miss out on something. And by missing out on something, only then do we catch a vision for wanting that thing. Sometimes I postulate all of us have to miss out on something before we really get serious about a vision to catch it. And that right there is the power of redemption. We can redeem past, present, and future by looking at the opportunities in front of us and not giving up. So I'm going to get to the point. If this life is focused on a God-given test of our ability to love, then it is a teaching test that trains us through what we miss. All of the things we seek turn out to be the very things we failed to grab when opportunity presented itself. Visions are birthed in pain. Foresight is our antidote to our past blindness. This is true of everyone. What makes us different is learning foresight earlier or later. The timing is a symphony of circumstance, people in our lives to lovingly make us miss out while explaining why, and our willingness to care. And that is the point. I'm Jesse Steele, jessesteele.com.